Thank you for tuning in to Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. We want to acknowledge that the content we discuss can be emotionally challenging and may evoke strong reactions. The stories we share often delve into tough subjects related to human trafficking, which may be difficult for some listeners to hear. Our goal is to raise awareness and promote understanding of the complexities surrounding human trafficking. Listener discretion is advised. Coming up on Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast.
A lot of victims don't start having memories till later in life. And what commonly happens is survivors start having dreams. They'll have dreams that they're handed a knife and are forced to stab a baby. They're having dreams that someone is ripping their chest open and shoving an eyeball in and then saying, "If you ever tell, we're always watching you," and stitch them back up. Sometimes they have notes sent to them. They'll have things left in their home, like a dead mouse or a dead animal, saying, "Don't ever tell."
Welcome to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. Today, my guest is Casey Gilboy. She works at a ministry called Relentless Hope, and they work with survivors of human trafficking and ritual abuse. I'm so excited to have this conversation today because we want to really help educate our audience on what ritual abuse is and that there's hope and resources out there if that is something that you have gone through. And I feel like ritual abuse is such a term that people can't even wrap their mind around. And for people that have been through ritual abuse, oftentimes they don't even know that that's what they went through. I have a friend of mine who, she was in her 20s when she realized what she had went through, meaning she knew that she had a horrible childhood. She knew that she had been sexually abused. She knew that there were weird robes involved and twists on religious practices. But it wasn't until she was in her 20s that she started to put together that, oh, I was trafficked. Oh, I went through ritual abuse. And she talks about it in ways where she's like, I didn't even have terminology for it. I didn't know what I went through. I was literally a little girl when this all started. So when you talk about ritual abuse, if somebody was trying to understand what they've been through themselves or what a friend has been through and they're trying to put vocabulary to it, what would that be like?
What you said is exactly the situation, Jessica, where many survivors don't realize it's happening at the time because the way trauma works is it's so horrifying to be a child and experience the abuse that the brain locks it away in a little trauma box in the brain, you could put it. And a lot of the times they don't have any memory of the abuse. Lots of times they were drugged as well. So a lot of victims don't start having memories till later in life. And what commonly happens is survivors start having dreams. They'll have dreams that they're handed a knife and are forced to stab a baby. They're having dreams that someone is ripping their chest open and shoving an eyeball in and then saying, "If you ever tell, we're always watching you," and stitch them back up. Sometimes they have notes sent to them. They'll have things left in their home, like a dead mouse or a dead animal, saying, "Don't ever tell," if they start having memories. A lot of times the abusers keep track of the victims, even if they're not being abused anymore and growing up, trying to keep them silent. So a lot of the times their memories don't even start till later in life. So what will happen is a survivor will start having these dreams or memories, start Googling it, What's wrong with me? And then a lot of times they'll find our website, which talks about ritual abuse. And then they have a word for it, like, oh, it was ritual abuse. That's what I went through. And the ritual abuse is different than other forms of sex trafficking because it's more than just being forced to have sexual relations with someone against your will. It's sacrifices of animals and people. It's in the middle of the night being taken from your home and taken to an undisclosed location. And sometimes they don't remember where they were taken, so then they don't even know if it was real. Sometimes it's underground. Sometimes they're taken to church buildings, people's homes, parks, And the abuse can go as far as being anally raped, objects forced up their private parts, being forced to rape other children, being forced to kill other children, being forced to watch other people being killed, being forced to drink blood. And then these are rituals, meaning it happens on a regular basis. So whether it's once a week, once a month, but it happens regularly for years and years and years. And which causes extreme trauma, especially in children, where it fractures their brain and often they develop DID. And that's why sometimes their memories don't come until later in life. Many survivors, you could call it their programming, starts falling apart around age 30 or 40, and they can't keep it together anymore because the trauma needs to come out. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing their memories are coming. It's a good thing they're feeling something happen, like you said, with your friend. And then that's where they come to us and ask for help. And we, number one, believe them, and number two, say we're here to help.
That is so difficult to even think about, that being somebody's childhood. When the survivors come forward and they share their stories, whether that's with you or family members, do they ever feel like, what's the point? Nobody will believe me? Or do they feel like they're finally getting the freedom to share? What is that like for them when they're getting ready to share for that first time?
My favorite thing about our survivors is they want to make sure this doesn't happen to another child. And all of them are passionate about making a difference and trying to help save another child from this abuse. They have incredible compassion, incredible depth of empathy, and they join the ministry, and a lot of them say, I can't wait to get healed so I can help other survivors. And it breaks your heart, but it also gives you so much hope and joy that someone who has been so deeply abused physically, emotionally, sexually, immediately wants to turn around and help someone else. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
It almost brings me to tears because I think about, not only are they working through their own extreme trauma, but they're saying, I want to help somebody else, which means that then, I mean, that could mean so many different things, but that means I want to heal so that I can love and keep people safe. And these survivors are so brave, and they truly are heroes for so many others. Like you said, they want to help this not happen to other kids. What would you say are some of the things that people could watch for? Because like you said, this is happening in the United States. This isn't something that is just in foreign countries. This is in our own cities, in our backyards. And I feel like a lot of listeners, they're like, I won't even know what to look for. Let's say I'm a mom, I've got a fourth grader, and I notice there's something in my friend's kid, there's something that's going on. What would a parent look for? And what are some of those signs that they might be able to identify?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the way that satanic ritual abuse is formed is it's designed to keep the victim silent because mostly their abusers are their family, close friends, or community. So they have been warned or programmed, whether they subconsciously know it or not, that if they tell that their siblings will be killed, their mother will be killed, they use that against them a lot. So it's really hard to get a child to open up and tell the truth. And what we've found is it's just important to, if you see something, say something. And it's never a loss to call DCFS, to talk to a police officer. And the more exposure that a child would get, that someone sees something's wrong, they might feel safe eventually to open up to someone. They might not open up the first time, but just that I think for that child just to know someone was looking out for them gives them someone in their mind they know they could talk to someday. And they may not talk to you, the friend, but they might eventually talk to the second or third police officer that stops by. But anything is better than nothing. Saying nothing is the worst thing we could do. And that's something we're working with right now is we're trying to figure out a program we could present to teachers in the school system. Exactly what you said, ways to look for abuse that children may be going through and how we could help that child open up and find out more so that we could start to figure out a safety plan for them.
Well, Casey, I love your honest answer because I think a lot of times people are looking for, here's the 10 red flags to look for if somebody's being trafficked. And in reality, it takes relationship, it takes trust and building for somebody to feel safe enough to open up. And then also that their family members aren't going to get killed or they're not going to be in trouble or they're going to get abused more. And that reminds me of my friend who had gone through ritual abuse. And she said it was a teacher in elementary school that was just really nice to her, that gave her positive reinforcement of who she was as a person, the work that she did in the classroom. And she said that the teacher's words of encouragement sustained her so many times when she was going through the next decade of ritual abuse. And sometimes it's not something that's going to be identified right away, but it might be somebody that speaks truth and love into their life, even as a teacher or a friend or a parent, whatever that looks like.
Exactly. And I think because Utah is such a family-friendly state, we love living here, we love raising our kids here, but the unfortunate truth is that the majority of survivors are trafficked by their own family. If you do see something that's off, to trust your gut and follow through with that instead of think, oh, that wouldn't happen here, I'm just making that up. No, listen to your gut intuition. Like you said, if you think your neighbor's kid or your friend's kid or someone may be being ritually abused or trafficked, to say something about it. And maybe it's saving a life.
Utah is a beautiful state and there's so many wonderful things about it. And I think because of that, sometimes it's hard to look at the dark side of things. But I do agree with you that if we see something, say something, and that really does help shed light onto the things that we often don't want to look at. And these are hard conversations. We don't always get invited back to some dinners because of the conversation that comes up. But I hope that people are getting more involved and willing to engage more in these topics, because we really do want to shed light on it so that we can stop trafficking. We want to help kids be safe in our communities. We want them to be able to have safe adults that they can talk to, and also to know that they are not alone. So if you've been trafficked, if you've gone through ritual abuse, please know that you're not alone, that there's help and support out there. If you want to reach out to our rescue, or if you want to reach out to Relentless Hope, please do not hesitate, and we will do our best to support you and to walk alongside. We're going to take a break right now, and we will come back in just a little bit. I want to thank today's sponsor, the Our Rescue Store, for supporting this podcast. Did you know that Our Rescue Store features survivor-made items? In this critical fight, they serve as symbols of hope. By choosing to purchase one of these beautifully handmade items, you will impact the healing journey of survivors and help them reclaim their lives in the process. We encourage you to shop survivor-made items on the Our Rescue website. It might only be a few dollars to you, but it makes a world of difference to them. And in case you need any extra motivation, use promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase at store.ourrescue.org. That's VOICES10 at store.ourrescue.org. Welcome back to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. As you've been listening, we've been talking about some really difficult things. Hearing about ritual abuse is not easy, and a lot of people don't believe that it's real. Even you hearing it now might be your first time of ever hearing about it, but I thank you for engaging in this conversation. And we want to give more information on how you can get involved, different things that are applicable to either if you've been trafficked, if you've been through ritual abuse, what can I do to get support and help? And also if you want to get involved in helping a survivor of ritual abuse or trafficking. So I'm here with Casey, and we are going to talk more about those specific things now. Casey, you're a huge advocate for helping with all kinds of things. Internet safety, helping families really know how to keep their kids safe from pornography, from trafficking, from sextortion, all these different things. And more recently, you got involved with this ministry so that you could specifically help with survivors of ritual abuse as well. What is your passion behind getting more involved when a lot of people want to run away when they've already been an advocate in so many different areas?
I've been a pastor's wife for 17 years. I've lived overseas as a missionary doing relief and development work, and I've also worked with church members for so many years and started realizing trafficking and sexual abuse is a huge problem in America as well. So I started researching, taking counseling courses. I just went above and beyond what maybe the normal person would do because I was ready to dive in and learn the truth of it because I wanted to be better equipped as a pastor's wife to help our church members. But then I started realizing this is a huge problem everywhere, and I was just desperate to join some sort of ministry and put all my knowledge and pastoral experience to use. And so I was thrilled when Cindy Metcalf, the director of Relentless Hope Ministry, called me and asked me to join last year.
Did you have any hesitation? Because I feel like, even for me, you give up some of your innocence when you get more involved. And sometimes it affects how you look at things. I know for me, how I look at different social media platforms is completely different now because I know that kids get trafficked through these social media platforms. And so for me, it's almost a trigger when somebody's talking about it. And I know with trafficking and wanting to keep kids safe, that's also something I feel like I've given up some of my innocence of thinking that kids are safe and I'm more protective now. So when somebody calls you and says, do you want to help out in a ministry and an organization that is specifically for sex trafficking and survivors of ritual abuse? Did you have any hesitation or nerves about that?
I personally didn't, but that was because my heart had been prepared for years. I had all this knowledge and I wanted to put it to use. And I had my years of, you could say, losing my innocence, learning about trafficking and sexual abuse. And everyone has their time frame where you learn that it happens, you feel the grief, you feel the disgust because you're human and we should. No child or person should have to go through trafficking or ritual abuse. But after a few years of that, my grief settled and it turned to righteous anger. And I'm like, I'm done grieving and I'm ready to participate and I'm ready to serve. And everyone I know has their time frame of grieving. It feels like you hit people with a bomb sometimes when you tell them about trafficking and ritual abuse, and we know it takes them time to digest it and process it and then on their own time decide how they want to get involved. So by the time she called me, I was ready to go, and I was so excited to finally join a ministry helping survivors not only in America but Utah.
That really makes sense, and I like that you explained your journey because I do feel like a lot of people, when they first hear about it, it's that bomb, and it's the grieving. It's the giving up of the innocence, and that actually I think would be encouraging for people to hear and our listeners to hear because sometimes it stops there where they're like, okay, I'm so sad and so hurt and so angry that this happens and I just want to run away. But with your process, you leaned in until it became, like you said, a righteous anger. I'm going to do something about it. And even for men, because I feel like my guy friends often feel like their first response is, I want to kill that trafficker. I want to go after the people that hurt this child. And there's understanding in why they feel like that. But if they do that, then they're going to go to prison for murder. And they don't feel like there's something that they can actually do. So when you talk about your process and getting to that righteous anger and I'm going to do something about it and relentless hope, you are actually able to then lean in and do something about it. So with Relentless Hope, I believe you're a survivor advocate. Is that right?
Yes. So I am a board member victim advocate, treasurer, and survivor support group leader.
Well, that's a lot of hats.
Yes, and I love wearing them.
What is your favorite hat that you wear?
I love being in charge of the survivor support group. It is monthly, and I'm walking the survivors through the book, The Body Keeps Score, so they can start to process their trauma, but also look forward with hope. And the design of the book, if you've heard of the book or read it, its purpose isn't to just soak in the trauma and just relive it over again. It's how can we move forward and how can we become our best selves? How has this trauma actually made us a great person? What are the good things about us and how can we use that to make the world a better place? And it really brings the survivors out of their trauma cycle and gives them hope that they have things they still have to offer this world. And they have a unique perspective on life because they have empathy and they want to help others because they don't want anyone to go through what they went through.
So it's a survivor support group. And how would a survivor get involved or reach out to you guys if they wanted to be a part of that?
So if you go to our website, relentlesshopeforyou.org, you can sign up with your email and our director will get back to you and give you information on when our support group is and assign you a victim advocate and you will start your healing journey. And the survivor support groups are all on Zoom, so people can join from all across America and they can join from the comfort of their home. They can mute their microphone and turn off their video camera if they don't feel comfortable being seen, because many of our survivors are afraid of being re-trafficked or stalked. And for those that have started to feel safe and unmute their microphone and turn their video camera on, they participate in our discussion questions after I give the lesson and they start to encourage each other on their healing journey and feel like they have hope again and feel like they have a community of people to support them.
I think the hardest thing is there hope afterwards. And anytime that we start to feel like I'm hopeless, for any of us, if it goes to the point of feeling hopeless, then it's like, well, now what? What am I even living for? And so to have other survivors surrounding each other and being able to really speak truth into each other's life and hope, I think that's really incredible. So if somebody wanted to become a survivor advocate, is that something they could do as well? Or what does that process look like?
For anyone that's interested in how they can join our ministry, they can go to our website, fill out the contact form that's on there, and our director, Cindy, will get back to them. And we will do the vetting process, do some background checks, find out what your experience is, where your mental health level's at, and we will decide if someone is safe enough to work with our survivors. And even if they aren't able to become an advocate or serve directly on our staff, we appreciate the prayers, the support, and any sort of financial backing, because all of us on staff, including our director, are volunteer-based and none of us are paid.
That's an incredible way to get involved, and that is awesome that you guys are all volunteering your time. You're truly giving your hearts and showing up in such a beautiful way. Is that something that men can get involved with as well, or is that just women that are advocates? How does that work?
That's a fabulous question. I'm so glad you asked that, Jessica. Many people don't think that men get trafficked and that they aren't sexually abused, but they are actually. And so we are in need of men advocates to help with our survivors who are male. And we prefer to put female advocates with female victims and male advocates with male victims. And it's quite sad for us to see how many male victims haven't been believed, mocked almost, because if you're sexually abused as a man, it's almost seen as a badge of honor, like a good thing. When they come to us, they find the empathy they never had and a safe male to talk to. And we are always hoping and praying for more male advocates and staff members to join our team.
Well, that's good to know. And I think for even my guy friends that are looking for ways to get involved, I'm definitely going to tell them about Relentless Hope, that they can become an advocate and they actually can help support a man or a young man that has been through such horrible abuse and the healing process for them.
Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
And hopefully our audience will want to get involved as well. I think many of you are asking us all the time, how can we get involved? And so one of my goals within the podcast is to give you more ideas on how you can become part of the solution. because we know what the problem is. Once you're leaning in and engaging in with what the problem is and you're willing to accept that this is happening here in the United States and around the world, now what? And I bring to you Casey today because I want you to know now what, whether that's you get involved with Relentless Hope or you start something in your own community or you reach out to somebody that you know is in need. Please get involved. Be a part of the solution. And I truly believe you are the solution. It's not just those that are part of anti-trafficking organizations. So thank you. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. Big thanks to this week's sponsor, the Our Rescue Store, for supporting the podcast. The Our Rescue Store is committed to responsibly sourcing products that unite conversations about human trafficking, raising awareness, and contributing to the movement against it. With more than enough colors, designs, and items to choose from, there is definitely something for you. Find something you'll be proud to own and be an advocate for change. Visit store.ourrescue.org and use the promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase. That's VOICES10 on store.ourrescue.org. Welcome back to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. My name is Jessica, and I am here with Casey, who works with Relentless Hope. And we've been talking about survivors of sex trafficking and survivors of ritual abuse. We're going to go into a little bit of what happens to those that are abusing these survivors. And Casey, I know that you work with so many survivors, and oftentimes survivors that I work with have a hard time even telling their story because they're worried that nothing will happen to the person that's been abusing them. In your experience, if somebody has gone through ritual abuse or sex trafficking, what happens to the person that has been abusing them?
Well, sadly, for majority of survivors, they, if they ever have reached out for help and filled out a police report or told a family member or told a pastor, they're not believed. And oftentimes we find that a lot of the trafficking rings have connections with law enforcement, legislatures, et cetera. And so it can be difficult sometimes to charge these perpetrators because a lot of times the perpetrators are working in these avenues where you're trying to get justice. And we feel like the more traction we get and the more survivors stand up and the more cases we help them with, we do help with legal advice and helping them start a case against their perpetrators. Over time, if you have enough evidence and enough people speaking out about the abuse, people will start getting charged and justice will be served. But so far, a lot of them haven't gotten the justice they've been seeking. So that is part of our ministry, is to propel this forward, not only raise awareness, but to help all of the survivors realize that you can get justice. Don't give up. It may be hard. And there may be people involved in high up positions who don't want your story to be told, but we're willing to stand up against the beast.
So survivors often aren't even believed when they come forward with their stories. So if they're coming forward and they're actually wanting to do a case against their trafficker, which takes so much courage to come forward to also then say, now I'm going to press charges, what kind of evidence do they need in order to start a case?
We do a lot of personal counseling and coaching with our survivors to help them build up their evidence. And we have a team of people who help our survivors in many different ways with compiling medical documents, hospital documents, records, and just they're sharing their story and their testimony. And lots of times, if there's one perpetrator, the average is that every perpetrator has about 120 to 130 survivors. And the more that survivors speak out, there might be other survivors that say, me too, they abused me too. And that raises the possibility that that person will actually be charged. The more evidence, the better their chances of being believed and heard in court.
I really appreciate you saying that, especially the medical and the, whether that's text messages, whatever that different piece of evidence is, and sharing your story. Because I think sometimes survivors are discouraged because they share their story, but then they're like, I don't know what my evidence is. Or they go to the doctor, for whatever reason, the medical staff misses that they are a victim of trafficking, and then they go back and they're trafficked again. But survivors can say, okay, here's my medical records from 4 years ago. Here's my medical records then 6 months later or a year later. And they can use that to help with the case against the perpetrator. And it gives them encouragement. Hopefully, if a survivor is listening right now and you are currently being trafficked, be encouraged to go to the doctor. Be encouraged to continue to seek the help that you need, whether that's through a therapist, through different avenues, because that all can be compiled. And like you said, the Me Too, I also was trafficked. So Casey, with your message, if you were to say something to a survivor of ritual abuse right now, let's say there's somebody that's listening right now and he or she is in the middle of it, they're not yet on the other side of freedom, what would you say to them to encourage them to keep going and what to do?
I would say, we believe you. We're here for you. You're not alone. And we're ready to fight the fight with you. We're in it for the long haul. And we're not giving up. And we're not going anywhere.
I think hearing we believe you and we're here and we're fighting with you. And also, like you said, we're not here saying here's three times that we get to meet and then that's it. That's the end of our services. You're saying we're here for the long haul. We're here to walk alongside. And hopefully survivors that are listening right now will hear your message and hear your voice and hear your heart, that you really will show up when that phone call comes.
Yes, and we are fighting in so many ways for our survivors. Our ministry recently met with Burgess Owens' Human Trafficking Task Force here in Utah and gave them some advice and legal avenues we think that could help survivors better in Utah. And unfortunately, a bill that we were pushing to be passed to change the statute of limitations in Utah did not pass, but we're fighting for it to be passed next year because there should be no statute of limitations. If a survivor wants to come forward and say that someone trafficked them or sexually abused them 10 years ago, there should be no law that says, oh, we're sorry, 6 years has passed, they can't be charged anymore. Why would a survivor want to talk anymore or get help if there's no chance that their perpetrator could be charged? So we want that statute of limitations to be changed so that whether they're 30, 40, 50, they still have time to reach out for justice from something that happened to them when they were children.
If there is somebody that's listening that knows somebody that has been trafficked or has been through ritual abuse, and they're the ones that are supporting them, whether that's a family member that's supporting them, a friend, things like that, what advice would you give to a support person that's helping somebody through their healing journey?
Well, that's a great question. I think first and foremost to say exactly what I just said. I believe you. I'm here for you. I'm not going anywhere, because survivors are afraid that they're going to push away their friends and family when they start speaking out again about their truth. And people feel like I need to have all the answers. I need to be adequately equipped for survivors. I don't have a counseling degree. I'm not a lawyer. No, anyone can be a support. Anyone can be a listening ear and just say, send a text. How are you today? Did you have any bad dreams last night? How was your counseling session? Have you been eating? Have you been sleeping? Do you want to go off for a walk? Do you want to go get something at the cafe? Just being a friend. And they don't always want to talk about their actual abuse. They don't want to tell you the gruesome, horrific details. They oftentimes just want to know you're there for them when they say they had a bad night. And it's not as complicated as we think it is.
Such great advice, Casey. And I think that I remember hearing from a survivor once that sometimes when somebody's wanting to be an advocate for them or a friend or a support network, they want to hear the details of what they've been through, but it's for their own, for the advocates, like own, I don't know what the right word is, but their own gratification or their own understanding versus actually helping and supporting. So I think sometimes, like you're saying, don't ask about the details. that's not what a survivor necessarily needs, is to walk through the details. They need somebody to say, let's go for a walk. Let's talk about whatever it is that's on their mind versus tell me all the details of what you've been through.
Exactly. Because a lot of times people, you can't hide on your face when you're shocked with these horrific details. And survivors, they're sick of seeing that look on people's faces, the disgust, the shock, the horror. And so if we don't ask, then that's okay. You don't need to know all those details, but that is the blessing of having an advocate. For those of us who have been doing this so long, there is no shock factor for us. There's nothing you can tell us that we haven't already heard. We're not going to gasp. We're not going to say anything that would make you feel embarrassed for telling us that. And that's the blessing of knowing your place if you're a supporter or you're an advocate who has been equipped to walk a survivor through those traumatic memories. Whereas if you're just a friend or a supporter, it's okay. You don't need to ask. And if they do decide to disclose that, you can even say, wow, that's a lot to hear, but I believe you. Please know I believe you. And I'm sorry you went through that, instead of that's hard to believe, or I can't believe that happened.
Well, thank you, Casey. I appreciate that. And I really hope that people that are listening will reach out to you and your organization, because I think that they can learn more if they're that support person. And also people that have gone through ritual abuse and sex trafficking, I hope that they feel like there's hope today and that they have a glimpse of something else that they can hold on to. For those of you that are listening, thank you so much. We are all about bringing difficult conversations to the table. That's why we created a podcast, is we want to have conversations that either aren't happening or that aren't having a light shed on them. And so ritual abuse and sex trafficking is something that we really want people to understand, and to understand what it actually is and what it isn't. And so I'm so grateful that Casey has come today to talk about this. Thank you for listening. We know that this is a very difficult conversation and a difficult topic. So take it, learn from it, grow, and get involved with whatever that looks like. And we've given you a few options of how to get involved. There are more ways to get involved, so keep listening to the podcast and you'll find out more ways. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks for listening. Did you enjoy this episode? If so, please leave us a review and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have ideas for future episodes, email us at voicesforfreedom@ourrescue.org. Lastly, we encourage you to join the fight. Make a difference today by donating at ourrescue.org or text podcast to 75004. Again, that number is 75004.
Next week on Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast, we will have an amazing and courageous woman. Her name is June. She is a survivor and is the chairman of Our Rescue Survivor Advisory Board. She's going to share her story, how she realized that she had been trafficked as a child. She also is going to share what it means to really be trauma-informed and how to help other survivors. So join us next week as we talk to June.